It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Bernstein and Holmes, your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score.
On third down and six, here they come. Gordon's coming. Levis gets wrapped up, flings it ahead. It's picked off. Tyreek Stevenson will give the Bears the lead on another defensive play.
Indeed. It was a hell of a way to start the season. It was really kind of ideal for those of us who exist in this place of Bears discomfort where they won the game and they've got a whole lot of work to do. And it's a very familiar place for those of us who have talked about the Bears for many, many, many years, even
many years.
Probably too many. Robert Mays joins us now to lend some degree of sophistication and knowledge to the proceedings, as he is the host of the Athletic Football Show on Twitter at Robert Mays, and with us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Doing all right. How are you guys doing?
Okay. I think with the Bears, I don't know. I think they're still in tough this week, but as they say, it's a week to week league. You get out of there with a win and you get to feel good.
Yeah, I think your point about the comfort and familiarity is right. I was just laughing to myself as Tyreek Stevenson brought that ball back. I was like, man, I know this place so well. And my wife watched the first half or so with me. She's not a football person. And she came back down later and she was like, so what happened? I was like, they won. She's like, what do you mean they won? I was like, yeah, they won the game. And for someone not familiar with how this all goes, it was a shocking revelation. But for me, this is just a tale as old as time.
If you know, you know. I mean, those of us who've been, what, like, I was talking about this earlier, man. Like, that win, that was so 2018. That's what that was, where it's like you're all excited after it, and all the pick six and the Jalen Johnson interception and the special teams play and Jonathan Owens. And then what do we have on Monday? On Monday, we're all like, okay, where's the offense at? This is not the Bears aren't going to have to win like this all year, are they?
You certainly hope not. And I went back and I watched the offense this morning, and maybe this is just me trying to lean into some week one optimism, but I think that it's not nearly as bad as the final box score showed. The offensive line and concerns are definitely something we can talk about, and I think that's probably the realest element here. But some of the things that we saw from Caleb Williams and what that final stat line is, I don't even know what he eventually finished, but it was, you know, below 50% completions. He had 92 yards. His down-to-down play at the quarterback position was significantly better than I think that final stat line would lead you to believe. So that
how and why
feel at least a little bit better. His eyes are going to the right place. He's playing on time for the most part when he's allowed to, when there's not instant pressure. The ball is going to where it probably should go. There were just weird accuracy issues. You know, obviously we have the out and up miss to Keenan Allen that should have been a touchdown, but you know, he dirted probably three or four throws over the middle of the field that it was just kind of weird to see. It's like, I don't understand why he's missing in that way. Low misses are better than high, and pretty much all of them were low. So if you want to spin it optimistically, that's fine. You had three batted balls that probably could have been completed. So I just think that completion percentage, based on how the game actually went, probably should have crept up closer to like 60-ish percent. Keenan Allen drops a touchdown. So again, the final box score and the numbers are awful, but I do think that there are actually some reasons for optimism built in here.
I think that maybe what you're talking about, Robert, with him grounding the balls that could have been interceptions, the overthrow, I think maybe it really got in his head going into this game. Don't turn the ball over. We can win this game if you, and I know like asking Caleb Williams to be conservative is not what any Bears fan wants to hear, but I do wonder if that part, because he did not throw an interception. He did not turn the ball over. We know that those were big time bugaboos of Justin Fields in his first games and throughout his career. I bet this organization was like, just don't turn the damn ball over. Do you think it had something to do with that?
Possibly. I also think that he was just a little bit geeked up. It's game one. You're at home crowd. You know, you have all these expectations that have been thrown on you. It's not surprising to see him just be a little bit off over the course of the day. And the low misses, I had a conversation this summer about CJ Stroud and just with some of the coaches in Houston. And I was talking to his quarterback's coach, Gerard Johnson, about this. And he's like, he misses low every single time he misses. And if you're going to be a quarterback in the NFL, missing low and having that be your tendency is just so much better than sky mailing throws, because you're avoiding turnovers in that case, but you're also avoiding throwing hospital balls for your guys. And that's what we saw. Even if there were incompletions, it wasn't nearly as ugly as him missing in some of the other ways that he could have.
Does that mean you may have to live with some of these batted balls that could be scary?
You know what? I was thinking the same thing, but if you look at the three batted balls, and I think there were three. One was the Ernest Jones play where he absolutely demolishes Coleman Shelton in the red zone on that blitz. Another was a screen that he just failed to pop over an unblocked defender. That's just something where you're learning what you can and cannot get away with in the NFL. He tried to throw that ball with zero touch on it. He just needs to float that a little bit. And then the third one is just, that's a batted ball. And that specific situation, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was throwing the ball to his right side and it was Sebastian Joseph Day got his hand up. That's a spot where when they're watching film on Monday morning, either Chris Morgan or Shane Waldron has to be telling Nate Davis and Coleman Shelton, like, if he's going to jump like that, you got to make him pay for it. And that's something that I would have liked to have seen in that moment. So I do think that the batted balls affected the stat line. I don't think that they were on like quick game drop back concepts where you think it's going to be a consistent problem in the normal rhythm of your passing game. I think they felt a little bit more isolated than that.
The defense, Robert, seems to have put out this from it feels like day one of the OTAs, this edict that they are a top five defense, even though there was nothing to necessarily prove that going into the season. Overall observations or potential proclamations about the Bears defense after week one?
We'll see what happens against an offensive line that has a better right side. Obviously, their right guard gets hurt in the middle of that game. They have to go with somebody who I believe is an undrafted free agent or just somebody that's on the back end of the roster. Nicholas Petit-Frere is kind of a question mark at that right tackle spot. And so we'll see what the pass rush looks like when you're playing against an offensive line that's a little bit more established than the one we have in Tennessee. But overall, I'm just extremely encouraged by so many of the things that they were doing. Matt Eberflus is a fantastic defensive play caller. I mean, like Matt may be a little bit strong, but I was so impressed by what he did on Sunday. I mean, just some of the ways they were using Tremaine Edmonds and some of those passing down looks and you know, some of the games and the stunts and the way that the back end is just capable of playing when all those guys are healthy. So I still have, you know, my reservations about them getting after the quarterback with four against better offensive lines, but I mean they checked every box you would want them
that's,
to.
That's where the safety and cornerback blitzes begin, because they sure showed a lot of that in the preseason too.
And I like that. I like having it feel a little bit more dynamic on third down. There was a play where they did this a few different times where they had Edmonds kind of walked up over the center, and you do that as a way to affect pass protection, right? If the center's covered by a linebacker, it's probably hard for him to account for anybody else. And they had Edmonds drop out of that look. They had Edmonds covering the back as part of that look a couple different times. So he's kind of in the pass rush and he's kind of not. And I just think that the little wrinkles involved with this defense, now that they've gotten to build on it a little bit with Eberflus going into his first full year as the play caller, I'm very excited from a technical standpoint about what this is going to look like.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
For Trent.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
I liked the way that he widened the ends at one point. I liked seeing Andrew Billings play some three technique. I thought Tremaine Edmonds had the kind of game where some of that stuff doesn't show up. Like, he's just credited with a tackle on that play, but his ability to disengage, cover ground, finish the play by keeping a guy behind the first down marker. And Robert, the number of passes that Edmonds seems to dissuade with his length and his the discipline of his drop distance, that's the kind of thing that if you only notice it when you lose it.
That's why he's here. right? I mean, that is specifically why he's here, is because of that ability to cover all of that ground and show that length in the middle of the field. I think two different considerations there. I mean, you think about what Matt Eberflus had with Darius Leonard when he was in Indianapolis. That's the skill set that they were trying to replicate. And Edmonds is last year in Buffalo, again, in a very zone-heavy scheme. The ability to just kind of erase that area as the Mike linebacker, it's hugely valuable when you be a zone-heavy team. And we know that's what Matt Eberflus wants to do. You just look at the back seven overall. When this group is healthy, there are no defined weak links. There's no linebacker you can pick on. There's no nickel you can pick on. Even if they may not have superstars all over the place, but there are ascending players. Very few teams in the NFL have a starting nickel personnel where there's not a single guy where you can sit there and say, all right, this is the guy that we want to go after. And that's a really good place to be.
Such a great point on that. We talk about perspective a lot after week one. We're trying to have perspective on Caleb Williams, even perspective on the defense, as you said, going up against a loaded offensive line next week. What kind of perspective should we have for the Bears offensive line at this point? Do we give them the same benefit of the doubt, the rotation at right guard, the problems that Coleman Shelton had at center? Do we let that ride too, or do they have a problem on the interior?
The reason that I would see it a little bit rosier than that is because we've seen Tevin Jenkins play some really good football when he's been on the field, especially last year. And he was just downright bad on Sunday. I mean, it's one of the worst performances I've seen from him since he became a full-time starter. He's getting pushed around by Trevondre Sweat, you know, just missing assignments kind of left and right in a way that I was a little bit surprised by. The Coleman Shelton thing, I mean, that's something that was the first time that we've seen him. I don't know what to make of that.
Bad.
You would hope.
I hope it's not because that he was lined up against some
Sweat.
Monsters yeah. who are going to learn are some of the best around at what they do. That's possible, but that had better be the case.
Well, we had two plays in that game where the Ernest Jones blitz that I mentioned before that leads to a tip pass where he just gets completely bowled over by blitzing Ernest Jones. And then later in the game, the same thing happens to Ryan Bates. And I just thought that in a post-Lucas Patrick world, we were beyond those lowlights where you have individual offensive linemen ending up on their backs against single pass rushers. So you hope it gets a little bit better, but the early returns are not good. And if you had a concern personnel-wise coming into the season about that offense, it was the interior of the offensive line. And I don't think anything that happened on Sunday would lead you to feel even a little bit better about that.
What about tackles?
Tackles I thought were, you know, significantly better. Immediate exterior pressure. You know, the only real sack I think that an edge player had in that game was Harold Landry on a stunt that was, again, a screw up by Coleman Shelton. So there are a couple misses in the run game, I would say, and a couple things where I thought the assignments were high degree of difficulty in the run game. That big TFL where you're asking Braxton Jones to get all the way out on the corner. Excuse me. You're asking Darnell Wright to get all the way out on the corner. Just little things like that. I mean, it's week one. There's going to be a lot of stuff that looks really good on the chalkboard, looks really good on the whiteboard in training camp. And as you actually see what it looks like in practice, there are going to be some gaps and some holes. And I thought design-wise, that was more where some of the issues with the tackles came up, not down-to-down consistency.
Were you surprised that Cole Kmet didn't play more or have a bigger effect on the offense?
Yeah, I just that whole thing is frustrating to me and a little bit confusing to me. I think that Gerald Everett is one of those players that when you watch him move for a man that big, he has excellent short area quickness. And so if you're an offensive coach and you're an offensive coordinator, you're going to look at that skill set and say, ooh, all right, this is a matchup advantage on a guy like a linebacker.
Or goal line post up.
But that's kind of my thing is those plays, even if they look pretty, and even if you think this is something that we can tap into, for the most part, those are inherently inefficient plays. Those are inherently inefficient completions and targets. So I just don't want that to be a huge part of the offense. I think that right now, what Cole Kmet is giving you as a player in terms of some of the vertical stretch that he provides, his ability to stride out, and what he's doing as a blocker, I would just rather see him more involved with the offense than the diet that we're currently getting of Gerald Everett and that we got in the preseason. We'll see how that ultimately shakes out.
We've mentioned Houston a couple of times so far. I mean, I look at them, they're scary, obviously, because of the talent that exists. What makes them even scarier to me is they got a taste last year. They blew out the Browns and then lose to Baltimore in the playoffs. So teams like that, there always seems to be more motivation coming from them. How if you started to look at this Bears-Texans matchup And is there any possible way they can win? Because it doesn't feel good right now here on a Wednesday.
We'll see what happens with the offense. I mean, if the offense plays the way that it did on Sunday, there's absolutely no shot they're going to win because the defense is not going to carry them to a win against the Texans. The Texans are a really good football team.
Yeah.
The Texans are going to be a really good football team. The combination of things that you have to worry about with them, it's not fun right now because you have every bit of energy and physicality that the Niners have brought over the last few years carried over to what the Texans are. D'Amico Ryans brings that on defense, and then you watch the way that they play on offense, and that's the feeling that you've gotten from day one from that Bobby Slowick group. So you have a play style that is conducive to wins on both sides of the ball. You have talent on both sides of the ball that is conducive to wins. Their way their defensive front plays, again, just the attitude and the mentality combined with the guys that they have. And I'm really encouraged by the ascending players that they have in the secondary. And then on offense, they have one of the most talented offenses in football. Those three receivers and the complementary skill sets that you're bringing to the table, that's phenomenal. We've seen that from these Niners teams before where you have so much skill position talent. But now you're pairing that with a quarterback that I think is going to be one of the best 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks in the league for the next 10 years. He is an absolute robot. The awareness, the instincts, the accuracy, I think he is on his way to being a special player. And when you combine that with all the other elements that this team has, how they play, who's on the field, it is a scary, scary proposition.
Robert, before we let you go, we appreciate you being generous with your time as always. What did you think of the Bears' distribution of running back snaps? Usage, personnel groupings, situations, all of it.
I thought it was fine. Okay. I mean, the Velus Jones thing is kind of like, all right, we're going to do this. And again, I think that's two things. That's week one. You know, you're trotting stuff out there because it looked fun in the preseason. And I do think that Shane Waldron has a tendency to get fixated on these things that look fun and look cool. If you watch what happened with the Seattle offense last year, they're doing a bunch of wonky stuff. I mean, they're doing sidecar motions with the running backs and, you know, little yo-yos to play actions. And they got multiple tight ends in the backfield all the time. Some of that was by necessity. They needed to do that stuff because of the pass protection issues they were struggling from in Seattle last year. But I do think that we're going to see a few things that almost feel tacked on for tacked on's sake. They're pieces of flair within the offense, and I don't think that's necessarily going away.
We get the Office Space reference as always. Thank you, sir. Much appreciated, Robert.
Always, guys. Talk to you soon.
See you, man.
Robert Mays, if you enjoy our Bears coverage, well, download the Odyssey app. Search for 670 The Score. Tap follow to receive alerts on all things Bears. And if you can't get enough, check out the Take the North podcast with David Haw and Dan Wiederer, breaking down the biggest storylines ahead of the Week 2 showdown at Houston. Follow Take the North on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts. And
Bears.
And speaking of podcasts, new Organizations Win Championship podcast out this morning, recorded yesterday. And we're talking about the departure of Will Perdue Bulls broadcast.
Right, they're doing the two-man booth
thing. Yeah, just sort of lamenting. And it's a Will Perdue appreciation.
Awesome.
Some notes.
He deserves it.
On E.J. Liddell. We have a terrific showdown question for you. We always announce the crowd showdown winner as well. And Jason talks about riding out the hurricane. If I look a little distracted, I am following on my weather app the path of where the hurricane is,
okay,
and how hunkered down. It seems like it looks like it's fine.
Well, then I take this chance. Ray, what time are we doing the Daily Score today? Are we recording that today?
Wait a minute.
Well, that's right. I don't have a podcast anymore. It's for the better.
Why don't you just come over to my place and we'll just talk.
Brody, you're always welcome on the Take the North.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah, did I touch
we might
nerve?
Actually
did
need a fill in next.
Did I go somewhere I wasn't supposed to go?
I did it. I said it. Did nothing. No, just while you were promoting podcasts, I was like, oh wait, we did do the Daily Score live from an Oak Park bar one time,
We sure did. Yeah. That was fun.
Or was it the Daily Score? Yeah, it was. Yeah,
that was.
Gabe Ramirez was on with.
That's right.
That was a fun night.
That
was a fun night.
Sounds like gas money or beer money you probably could have done if you're doing a live pod from a bar. Okay.
Yeah. Yes, and there was a gentleman there who was like Oak Park Dave or something, like a regular caller, sees Gabe and I in there, and then he bellied up to the bar with us and watched. I think we were watching. Was that the Bulls game night?
It was Bulls. We did immediate reaction after the Bulls.
That's what it was. That's right, yeah. Gabe. It was for the play-in game, and we did have a blast watching Bulls and eating wings.
All right, I got a question for you when we come back.
Oh, good.
I don't think it's particularly difficult, but it has to do with a current bear under much discussion, and it's a list of names that provides a little bit of context as to how we discuss the fortunes of this bear.
Okay, bear.
Bear.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.